It's Kieran Ryan here, and I'm talking to Faiza Khan, Legal Marketing Specialist at Liberty. Welcome, Faiza.
Thanks for having me, Kieran.
We're talking about retirement, and more specifically, retirement for women. It's a well-known fact that women live on average longer than men, and also with medical science progressing the way that it is, that lifespan could even be extended further. So that poses a number of problems for women who are looking at retirement. Can you break that down for us? What does that actually mean in practical terms?
Yeah, I think from a practical perspective, it's quite difficult because if you live longer, then it means that in your retirement years, you need to save more because you've got a longer lifespan and you need more savings to sustain you throughout that period. For women, it's even more difficult because we live longer than our spouses at the best of times, and we earn less than our spouses do. We've saved less than men have saved from a retirement savings perspective. And so we have a smaller pot of savings for a longer period, which makes it very difficult to, you know, to be self-sustaining during your retirement years. And if you're not self-sustaining during your retirement years, then you have to fall back on family, children, or the state.
One of the things that when we were speaking before, you mentioned the divorce rate in South Africa. I found that quite frightening. Just explain what that is and what impact that has on retirement savings for women.
Yeah, so the divorce rate, I think at the moment is, I think, three in five marriages end in divorce.
Within a
10-year period.
Within a 10-year period. Wow, that is frightening. Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
And women are at an average age of 44 years old when they get divorced. And a lot of those women have either never saved or they were never part of the employer pension fund or provident fund scheme. They never had retirement annuities because they believed that, they're going to retire with their spouses and that their spouses' retirement income would be sufficient for the both of them. So at 45 years old or at 44 years old, you get divorced and you've got to start from scratch.
Right. And is there any stat on the number of divorced husbands who are not financially supporting their wives?
Not that I'm sure there is, but right. I don't have them.
Okay. At age 44, there's a good chance, oh boy, this is bad news. There's a good chance that you could find yourself divorced and you now have to start looking after yourself. You have
yes.
to start saving for yourself. Okay. So
yes.
What do you say to a woman who's at age 45 and who has no life savings? It seems a bit hopeless to start even confronting savings at that point.
Yeah.
So what's your advice to them?
I think, that's absolutely frightening. So at 45 years old, you've got 20 years to retirement. So people generally are retiring anything between 55 years old and 65 years old. If you're 45 years old as a woman and you haven't saved for retirement, you have to start. So there's no option to just sit back and do nothing about it. Unfortunately, even if you have a little bit of income somewhere that could be saved, that's what you need to save. You've got to start somewhere and you've got to do some financial planning and figure out what your goals are. And if your retirement savings is your retirement pot is maybe on the low side, you'd have to do whatever is possible to increase your retirement savings. So you've got to use any disposable income that you have. You've got to perhaps try and figure out where you can get a passive income. You've got to utilize all of your tax deductions that you possibly can on your retirement annuities and then plow that rebate right back into that retirement annuity. Perhaps use your bonuses to also supplement your retirement savings. Your retirement savings has to become the focal point of your financial planning if you have not started by age 45.
What do we mean by a start? I mean, if you've got a spare 300 Rand, is that a start? I mean, it's not going to make a big difference if you need millions in retirement.
Yeah, half a loaf of bread is better than none. Yeah, so you've got to, and yes, when you do the analysis of what is needed and how much you need to save from a time value money perspective, those values are frightening. They're large, and even for people that are saving towards retirement, sometimes feels as though it's not enough, and it will never be enough. However, if you're a little bit realistic and you think about what your retirement expenses are going to be, and if it means that you need to lower your standard of living to a level that is comfortable, but perhaps not what you have been used to, then that's where you start. That can be your starting point. And then perhaps the 300 rand a month savings, you know, will get you to some point. Or maybe then the dependency that you have on your children isn't going to be as high. Perhaps you'd only need them to support you with 500 rand a month as opposed to 2,000 rand a month.
Right. And I think one of the things that we discussed before, it's really about getting into that habit of saving. So if it does start with 300 and you've got 20 years to go to retirement, the power of compounding interest will work in your favor, and you'll also, by that time, you'll start to see the results, and you get an extra 1,000 or 10,000. You're going to throw that into the pot as well, and it's just going to grow by itself.
Absolutely, and those habits are they're important to form, and it does become a little bit addictive when you do start saving, and you don't particularly want to plow into your savings unless you really, really have to. So, when you start, and we try and get that culture of savings going. We need to also filter that through to our children and teach them how to save and teach them how to earn money and how to spend it wisely and also how to save it, so that when they are adults, it's not difficult for them. It's their normal. And South Africa in general, we've got a really, really, really poor savings culture.
Right.
We spend most of our income on debt as opposed to savings.
Yep.
So if we try and increase that, that savings culture, then perhaps in the long run, we will be better off for retirement purposes.
That's a point. Now, South Africa has a notoriously bad savings rate, but women are particularly bad because of certain historical factors. So they traditionally relied on the husband. They thought they're going to be married, till death do us part. Okay, that didn't work out. So now they find themselves in midlife without any financial lifeline. Are there any other factors there that are impacting this particularly low savings rate for women?
Yeah, I think that it's quite frightening. Women seem to have received the raw end of the deal, and they are stuck between a rock and a hard place at the best of times, because a lot of households or households that have children are, I think it's about 50% of those households are headed by single mothers. So we have women that need to save, but they are supporting their children, and there's only a small number of those households that are receiving additional support from the child's father, which then makes it more difficult. And those women are also supporting their parents. So they're supporting their children, generally single-handedly, and they're supporting their parents.
Wow.
Okay. And that's known as the sandwich generation. There's also women that are supporting their extended families to try and help those family members and put food on the table, or, get to work or apply for jobs, and that's the black tax that women are paying at the moment.
Yeah, and it creates a lot of emotional resentment. I know we've spoken about this with a number of people. It creates huge family problems.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And there's also the pink tax aspect, where women have to pay more for goods that are pink from cradle to grave. Yeah. So
just explain that.
Girls' toys are more expensive than boys' toys.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a tax on sanitary towels and tampons for women. Your razor blades.
But that was recently zero rated for VAT.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, yes. Okay. So from a worldwide perspective as well. Okay. So your pink goods, your shaving cream and your razor blades, if it's marketed for women, it is generally more expensive.
Wow, didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's more difficult for women to save because they've got less money to save. They don't earn as much as men do. And they've got all of these other obstacles. But having said that, they still have to save.
How do we correct this? Do we start with a financial advisor? What is a financial advisor? What do they cost? How do you find them?
Yeah. Okay. So a financial advisor is someone that can assist you with your financial planning goals. And that is very important, because you don't need a financial advisor to buy a financial planning product. you need a financial advisor to help you establish what your financial planning goals are, and a person that is going to walk you through this financial planning journey. There are quite a few financial advisors out there. I mean, you can Google financial advisors, or you can approach a life insurance company and they can refer you to a financial advisor. You could speak to your friends and your family and they can refer you to a financial advisor. You possibly have to interview more than one financial advisor to find your fit. Generally, financial advisors at this point aren't charging a fee for their services because they are generally paid commission. Some financial advisors are charging a fee, some aren't. Mm-hmm. So that would be a considering factor for you. A lot of financial advisors will come to you, so your place of work or your home, and have meetings with you in your personal space. So there's not a lot of effort that's required from your side. But the important thing about a financial advisor is that you can't just use a financial advisor that your father used or that your husband uses. It has to be someone that relates to you as an individual, because your financial planning, it must be different. And you must have a relationship with your financial advisor that is open and honest, and you are happy to disclose all of your financial information to them, because they need that information in order to assist you.
Right. And there's another aspect to this as well. For a lot of people, when they sit down with a financial advisor, they get for the first time to confront what are their life goals. What do you want to do in 10 years? Where do you want to be in 15 years? And a lot of people are just sort of going day to day and they're not really looking at those life goals. So the financial advisor is going to push your face into that, right?
Absolutely. And that's called goal-based planning and holistic financial planning, because you have to look at every single aspect of your life and how that specific aspect of your life needs a financial plan. So it could be goals driven from an investment perspective. So it could be that you want to travel in the next 5 years with your children, and you've done a cost analysis, and in today's terms, it's going to cost you 50,000 rand. And your financial advisor is then going to do some calculations to see what the future value of that 50,000 rand in 5 years' time is going to be, and how you need to save in order to get to that point. And then your financial advisor is going to give you a solution, and that solution would be a financial planning product. And that's the only point that a financial advisor starts discussing products. It's after you know what your goals are and what you want to achieve.
Right. So I was going to come on to that. It's a product, and the products available for the retirement industry are sometimes quite hard to understand because they've all got different tax implications and they're structured in different ways. So would you say that it's more important to develop the habit of saving rather than to worry about what product specifically you're going to invest in?
Yeah, I think that the goal is the first point of call. So what is your financial planning goal? Because your financial planning goal is going to determine the type of product that you are going to use. And an example of that would be that if you are a self-employed individual and your financial planning goal is to save for retirement, then the product option would be a retirement annuity, because you don't have the option of having a pension fund or a provident fund or a preservation fund that you can just join. The only option is a retirement annuity.
So if you're self-employed, retirement annuity is all you can,
that's it.
Can get.
Okay. Absolutely.
But if you're employed, then you have pension fund, provident fund,
correct,
and these other things. Okay.
Correct. And also a retirement annuity. Mm-hmm. So the options just become greater. If you want to save for your children's education, and that's a long-term savings goal, then you could use either an endowment type of product or a unit trust type of product. And the fees, you'd need to compare the fees. You'd need to compare with an endowment. You're kind of stuck in that endowment wrapper for a five-year period, whereas with the unit trust, you've got more access. And then you have to ask yourself the question, do you want the access or do you want to be stuck in an investment for a longer period, because that is your goal? Hmm. So the goal will always determine the product.
Right. And of course, there are people, we're talking about people here who generally may not have savings, but there are, of course, women who've got savings, but it's sitting in a bank account.
Yes.
Which is not necessarily the best thing to do.
Yeah, I think that also depends, because if your goal is long-term savings, then a bank account is definitely not the right place for you. However, if the goal is to have an emergency fund, then the bank account is perhaps the right place for you, because there's minimum risk there. It's generally invested in money markets. But when, as soon as you start wanting to save for a longer period, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, then you need to diversify your investment portfolio so that you have access to equities and cash and bonds and property, so that you have the ability to grow that investment. If it sits in a bank account over that period, then inflation will generally deflate the capital value of that money.
Right. And of course, there are products there which, if you're starting late in life to save, there are products there which can, you know, accelerate. So they're a little bit more aggressive, should I say,
yes,
in terms of the final goals. So there are those available too to help you, you know, speed up a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all market related. So it all depends on what the market does. And it also depends on what your appetite for risk is. Because the type of portfolios that do have the potential of giving you a great return are also the types of portfolios that are quite risky.
Okay, let's move on to something a little bit more serious. That dreaded document called the will.
Yes.
All right, nobody wants to confront this. It's like the document of death, right?
Literally.
Yeah. But it's important that you have one, because you see so many estates get into an awful mess because there isn't a will. Just explain, first of all, what that is and why it's important to have one.
A will is probably one of the most important documents that you will ever draft in your life, and every single person must have a will. It is a document that will provide whoever you leave behind with some sort of acknowledgement of what your last wishes were. That is the document that will dictate how your estate will be wound up and who will benefit from your assets. And in the absence of a will, what will happen is that the Interstate Succession Act will dictate who your heirs are and who will inherit from you. And if that was not your intention, then there's no way to rectify it.
Right. It's quite simple, actually, to put together. You can almost do it yourself,
you
right?
You can do it yourself, absolutely.
So what are the preconditions for a will?
You need a will must be in writing. You must have mental capacity. Okay. You must be of sound mind. You must sign your will, and you must have witnesses, two witnesses are present.
That's it.
Yeah. Your witnesses can be from age 14 up, mm-hmm. and the testator, the person who's drafting that will or the person whose intention is embedded in that will, must be from age 16 up.
Okay. And if you can't sign your name, you can actually sign it with a thumbprint.
Yes.
If you
use a mark or a thumbprint, then there must also be a commission of oaths that is present while you are signing your will, and the witnesses are witnessing that it is you signing your will.
All right. So explain what a testator is. I didn't quite understand that.
A testator is a person who is leaving the last will and testament. So on my will, I would be the testatrix because I am a woman.
Okay.
On your will, you would be the testator.
All right. Okay. Now, I presume everything that we've discussed today applies as much to men as it does to women.
Absolutely.
Right?
Besides the pink tax.
Okay. Final point then. What would you say to women of any age who are either starting out on their careers or they find themselves in midlife, well into their careers, who perhaps haven't set their financial goals for life? What's your advice to them?
The first step would be to find a financial planner, financial advisor that you are happy to do business with, that you are happy to walk this financial planning journey with. And then you need to set your financial planning goals. And whatever those goals might be, it could be retirement, it could be short-term savings, long-term savings, it could be your estate planning, drafting a will, looking out for your minor children. Whatever those goals are, you can achieve those goals piecemeal. It doesn't have to be all in one go. You can have many meetings with your financial advisor, and at each meeting, you can try and fulfill the next goal.
Right. It's a point that often comes up, is that people through various stages in their career have built a savings pot. Then an emergency comes along. Maybe the child gets sick and they don't have medical aid. They've got to take that money and pay the hospital. Mm. And at that point, they break this habit of saving. And it's quite important, isn't it, that if that happens, if you have an emergency, that you actually pay back that emergency fund that you borrowed from.
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely. Because you've got to replenish it. You've got to keep it at a level that you're comfortable with. And if you do end up using a portion of it, it must be for an emergency. That's the first thing. So you can't have an emergency fund that you use for holidays. Okay. And then if this emergency does happen, if your house gets flooded and you don't have insurance, or your kid goes to hospital, like you said, and you need to pay doctor's bills, once those expenses have been paid, we need to now start putting the money back. And it becomes a little bit difficult, because where are you then going to get this money from to replenish? And it's like every other savings question, you start somewhere.
Right.
If it means that you're starting with the 50 rand a month that you have, that's where you start.
So there you go. You can start saving with 50 rand a month. It's
absolutely
a good place to start. Okay. All right. So we've been talking to Faiza Khan, legal marketing specialist at Liberty. Faiza, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.